Odoo is business management made so simple, a kid could explain it.
Sometimes business software can't talk to other programs. But Odoo, funny word, has every program from CRM to HR to accounting in one platform. It should cost a lot, but it doesn't. So you should use Odoo because they save you money.
Odoo makes a lot of sense, but doesn't cost a lot of sense. Sign up now at Odoo.com.
That's Odoo.com.
Good job.
Thanks.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
Hey, it's Mark Maron from WTF here to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. And I'm sure the reason you're listening to this podcast right now is because you chose it. Well, choose Progressive's Name Your Price tool, and you could find insurance options that fit your budget so you can pick the best one for your situation. Who doesn't like choice? Try it at progressive.com. And now, some legal info. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
Let's talk about something that's not always top of mind, but still really important. Life insurance. Why? Because it offers financial protection for your loved ones and can help them pay for things like a mortgage, credit card debt. It can even help fund an education. And guess what? Life insurance is probably a lot more affordable than you think. In fact, most people think life insurance is 3 times more expensive than it is. So with State Farm Life Insurance, you can protect your loved ones without breaking the bank. Not sure where to start? State Farm has over 19,000 local agents that can help you choose an option to fit your needs and budget. Get started today and contact a State Farm agent or go to statefarm.com.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first 3 grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble Mailbag. The Champions League, football controversies and 90s Premier League are the orders of the day. It's Saturday, 14th of September. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Adisha Nataraja.
Saturday, what a day. Rambling all week with you. Do remember, if you want to get involved with the mailbag, you can tweet us on X at Football Ramble, message us on Instagram at Football Ramble, and of course you can email us show@footballramble.com. Patron subscribers can also send us messages in the Ramble Discord. Head over to patreon.com/footballramble and sign up today to get involved with all that juicy goodness. patreon.com/footballramble. Now, on to the questions. Craig asked us this on Twitter, or X, depending on what kind of a wanker you are. Craig is not a wanker, I want to state for the record. He says this: I know this isn't Ask OTC, correct, but with the Champions League starting up next week, and a lot having been said about the format and schedule, what can we actually look forward to about the first round of fixtures, and who are some early dark horses? That's two questions, Craig, but we'll let you off. Andy, let's have some positivity about the new UEFA Champions League format.
Well, already, I think that the trepidation that surrounded the new format
has been really turned around since the draw has been made. Because since the draw has been made, unless you actually sat through said draw, people have been really excited about it. Because I think the fact that it feels like a succession of one-off ties, because there's not that home and awayness to it, despite the fact that it's an expanded group stage, which, of course, we're not going to really feel until after Christmas when there's not a break and there's going to be Champions League games in January, as we were saying, actually, on OTC this week. I think that is going to make a massive difference to how people feel this. And a step into the unknown makes it fresh as well, I think. So the sense that no one knows how many points it's going to take to qualify you, there will be a little bit of feeling your way into the format, not just for fans, but for... but for the teams themselves as well. And also, it feels like we've got some monster games from the get-go.
Yes.
And they feel like they're going to count. And they feel like they have to count because, you know, you're not going to play that team again. So there's no sense of, right, well, we'll get them next time. Or anything like that, is that? So it's Milan-Liverpool in the first week. And it's just Milan versus Liverpool.
That's your lot, folks.
It's massive. If Milan mess it up the first time, they don't get to have another go at Liverpool. And it already feels as if they're playing some sort of catch-up. There's no real way of defining in the new format how expensive that loss will be straight away, is there? And, of course, the fact that it's going to feel like a full sort of takeover because you've got Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday games and you've got no Europa League this week as well.
Yeah, it's kind of made for TV, isn't it, for the reasons you've articulated about the big games, because it's almost like the organisers felt... Right, people are only really interested in the big games on every match week. So if we just give them a couple of bankers every week, then we've basically sorted out our viewing figures. And then everyone's going to follow their own team somewhere and whatever. So it's kind of made for TV, really. I mean, I'm excited about it because of the bare bones of it, that it is, you know, strip everything away and it's just the best teams in Europe playing each other. It does feel like an absolute mess. And I do like the idea of, you know, teams having to feel themselves out and suddenly be concerned with teams that they don't necessarily play against opposition they're not necessarily playing with regards to where they stack up in the, you know, in the overall table. Because I would recommend everyone to have a look at the table now because it looks hilarious. It's just, you know, the scale of it is a monstrosity.
Yeah.
But obviously, as it goes on, we'll just get used to it. As with all these things, you know, we will just get used to it one way or another. I am looking forward to three days of...
Like we got used to VAR.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is kind of different, isn't it? This is not going to impinge on the fabric of the game. There's not going to be, I don't know, like, so when Girona play Arsenal on match day eight, you know, someone from Feyenoord isn't going to interrupt the game like a ladder match or whatever and be like, oh, I want a shot at the title. This is like, they don't really affect each other. The football on the field is still the same. I've just said that. I would like that to happen, though.
Yeah.
That would be the new change that I'd ratify for the 25-26 season.
I mean, obviously, UEFA are banking on people just getting used to things. There's some people still out there, believe it or not, who aren't used to the UEFA Nations League, but that's for another day. I think that people will like having Champions League three nights in a row.
But that is a one-off. That's not happening every week.
Yeah, but I think but that's a big start, though.
Yeah,
well, and then as you said during the, you know, there's no break in January, which I don't know how I feel actually. And I'm kind of looking at some of those fixtures being like, talk to me about climates. Talk to me about how cold it's going to be in Bratislava on the 21st of January.
This is
the moment where you get sad that Bode Glimt didn't make the Champions League.
Incredibly sad.
But it's interesting to say that when you talk about there won't be sort of home and away fixtures between teams. So there'll be more tactical battles for the football purists as well. But you will see your team playing a more variety of teams. I mean, I'm really trying here, UEFA. I'm really trying.
I know, you've touched on the brilliance of the old format, in that, like, you got to halfway through and you're like, right, we've played these teams three times. We're going to play them, you know, we're going to play them again. What do we need to get from this? Yes. I think back to Arsenal's campaign last year, which was sort of a little bit like that. It felt like, you know, there was jeopardy every game. Yeah. I don't really know with this, but also I don't think there was anything to fix. And
well, sure.
You see, I don't know about that. I think
teams will be happy they don't play Man City twice in the group stage.
There is that. That is the, yeah, there's less bullying.
This is like, what's the point if you're like, oh, they beat us 5-0 at our place, then we've got to go to theirs. Brilliant.
I think the fixing is more in the Europa League, to be honest.
We're not talking about illegal fixing, just for the record.
Yeah, exactly. The group stage of the Europa League, if we're talking about monstrosities, there's such a difference between the moneyed and wealthy teams, especially in the Premier League, who in any other country would make the Champions League, but there's only four places and there's a lot of really strong and really moneyed teams. Them versus some of the smaller teams is just... It's just pointless, really. So I think to have a variety of opponents in the Europa League will be more valuable to not know. And you won't know. Maybe, like, you know, the luster comes off the format a couple of years in when we start to get a ballpark idea of how many points you need to finish top eight, how many points you need to finish top 24, for example. A bit like your 40-point mark in not getting relegated from the Premier League, which is actually a bit lower, as history has shown us. For the moment, for this first year, we don't have any idea what that is.
No. And moving on to the second part of the question, who are some early dark horses from that big old Champions League at the moment?
Well, Craig was asking what can we look forward to about the first round of fixtures as well, and I can sort of combine an answer to the two. I'm looking forward to City versus Inter. I think Inter have got a chance this year. Ooh. Now, they last year went out of the last 16 to Atletico, which they really shouldn't have, because they're a better team than Atletico. They're a better team than made the final the year before.
And should have taken Man City to extra time in the final, at least with those chances.
Yeah, they should have done. Of course, you know, the best team doesn't always win a cup competition, so it's, but it's slightly different discussion.
I understand Man City are better than Inter, but still.
But yeah, Inter are improved a lot from then. Marcus Thuram's had an amazing start to the season. Mm-hmm. I think Inter have got a squad that can go a long way in this competition.
I think that's a sensible and calculated answer, Andy, because really, because of the way everything's gone, that Manchester City, Bayern maybe, even though perhaps we've yet to see what company can do, but really Man City and Real Madrid, again, PSG, you know, there's very few favourites. So I think anyone who isn't those two or three or four sides, I think you can have as dark horses. So, you know, years gone by, Inter dark horses, come on. But I think that's a fair answer.
Yeah, and as well, they're only getting used to the Champions League again. They were out of it for a long time. If we're going dark horses, I'd go Leipzig.
Ooh, I like that. I like it.
Really, really interesting transfer window. Of course, ended Leverkusen's 462-day unbeaten record in the Bundesliga, going back to before the international break. And I think they're going to get better with the players that they've signed.
Fish.
I do like the Leipzig shout. I was actually thinking...
Have your own shout.
Yeah, PSG.
I don't think you'd have them as dark horses.
I think you...
Pick another team now.
I think you can to a point, considering they play Arsenal, they play Atleti, they play Bayern Munich, they play Man City.
And they've literally never won it.
Yeah. And they got rid of Mbappe, and Barcola's starting really well.
Okay, so up until Man City won it, could you have had them as dark horses?
Yes.
No, you couldn't.
Yes, you can. You'd have got splendid odds on them. No, but I don't.
You
but
can't
I don't,
have PSG.
No, but fine. But then I won't have anyone because I just. But I just think
because you get annoyed
because I think this something about this that doesn't necessarily lend itself to them shooting themselves in the foot. But obviously, we get to the knockout stages and it's a different kettle of fish altogether. But there's enough big games in them in here for them to almost satiate that week-to-week drive. So bear in mind, the biggest problem with PSG throughout any kind of original season was that they would rinse the league. They would flex a little bit every other Wednesday or Tuesday whenever they had someone worth flexing against. And it would get to the knockout stages and you feel like they weren't fighting fit for a big fucking tie. They would either be a little bit, not undercooked, but they'd be kind of tactically a bit, you know, found wanting or almost just kind of didn't have that dog in them, I suppose. And, you know, those fixtures I've read out there, that almost scratches the itch of like, big team. Yeah, we're just gonna try and swing for you.
Inspired to be your best every week. Mm.
Exactly. You know what's the phrase? You know, iron sharpens iron. Yeah. And so we might be in a situation where it gets to the knockout stages, and they might have only beaten one of them, or maybe they've lost to one of them, and you know, done a number on the other two. But they could potentially come into that. You know, the final bit of this tournament.
Well, I mean, they were in the semi-final last year and should have probably gone past.
Yeah, but they didn't because
so you're right. So
they've got a little horse mentality.
Fine. So who's your dark horse then?
Right. Okay. So I'm going to go with Bayern Munich because. okay. Well, so
pick Villa. Somebody have a bit of fun with it.
But then even Arsenal.
I'll give you Arsenal.
Arsenal. Yeah.
Because they're never going to win it.
Okay. Well, then I'll pick Villa then.
Because they're never going to win it.
Oh. Clip that. Nah, I reeled you in there, didn't I, Andy?
Yeah. Well,
no, I think, Andy,
what were you saying about Celtic?
I think Arsenal have a chance, but I don't think they win it. What about Atalanta, Andy? They won the Europa League.
Exactly. So they're not a dark horse.
And Ademola Lookman, you know, if he scores a hat trick in every game, you've got to say they've got a chance.
They've had such a weird summer with such an incredible turnover of players and an unplanned turnover of players. I think they're going to struggle a little bit.
I think it's so hard to pick a dark horse, as we're now calling them. But yeah. Andy, you've got the next question.
Yes. From Jordan. Which of today's players would be at home in mid-90s Barclays land? I reckon Leon Bailey comes close.
But everyone, what does he mean? Like, everyone would be...
Well, you've got to have a bit of context. You've got to remind people what the 90s was like.
Yes.
In Premiership terms. So it's a different name of the league, firstly. Secondly, football was a little bit more brutal. It wasn't like brutal like the 70s and 80s, but you know, the players weren't protected by the referees as they are now.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point, isn't it?
So
pitches weren't as good.
Pitches weren't as good. Yeah, basically, the game didn't lend itself to...
Weirdly, less racism, but yeah.
Perhaps. The whole setup didn't lend itself to the more flair players, although flair players like Zola, for example, or Bergkamp when he came in, or even Ruud Gullit came in and flourished.
I think the point of those coming in is very important, in the 90s being a growth period for the Premier League, because Gullit was thought of as too old. Same with Zola to compete at elite European level anymore. Dennis Bergkamp had been a massive failure at Inter, which is why he ended up at Arsenal. So these guys who became... Even Cantona was kind of hustled out of France, really. So these guys who built the nascent Premier League were guys who had sort of been rejected from absolute elite-level football.
But they were also very tough players as well. And I know every footballer is tough. Like, you don't get to be a professional footballer and you're a weakling and so on. But, as I say, you've got the refereeing situation, you've got the pitches, you've got the whole sort of status of the league, blah-de-blah-de-blah, and a very sort of tactically more basic and often a 4-4-2.
Yeah.
I remember I was talking about this to somebody recently and I look back and I think, yeah, like... Where would Phil Foden fit into a 4-4-2? Do you know what I mean? Where would Mo Salah fit? He'd probably be farmed out on the wing, but just have to do a different style, and he wouldn't be able to
Modric,
flourish.
Modric, David Silva,
all that
they're
kind of
players
stuff
that you can't see in this sort of context.
Exactly. I tell you who would have flourished back in the 90s, and I know he's just left the Premier League, but Conor Gallagher, centre of a four.
100%.
He'd love it.
He'd be one of the best players in the league.
Yeah, because you've got the industry, but if you've got a little bit of something else... And there'd be a better example than maybe Gallagher, but if you've got a little bit of something else...
Is this too obvious a thing to say, but De Bruyne?
De Bruyne would have to play in the centre of a four. Now, I understand that, you know, in a 3-4-3...
I mean, he's a tank.
Yeah.
De Bruyne is Gerrard, yeah?
Yeah.
Of that kind of ilk, you know, but I mean like early Gerrard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
With, you know, better passing and kind of more consistent shooting. And quicker, yeah.
Because somebody like, say, again, I know he's not in the Premier League now, but someone like a David Silva, again, if you're, and we're talking about particularly like a 4-4-2, it would have to be like off the front man, that kind of role, wouldn't it, really?
Yeah.
And funnily enough, actually, when Wayne Rooney was playing... People would say, do you play him right up top when he had that season we scored loads of goals? Oh, but do you play him off? Rooney would have really flourished in a 4-4-2 off the main striker in that kind of position that England didn't really, you know, Teddy Sheringham kind of role.
I'd agree with that. So let's reverse engineer it to the players that we'd assume. You know, you mentioned David Silva there and where he needs to play. Why don't we reverse engineer it the other way?
Who could play?
No. But like those kind of players and find those kind of players now, Sheringham.
Yes.
Who would you say is a Sheringham now?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Because it's kind of like a little bit, in terms of literally the players playing right now, it's a bit Havertz-y.
Yeah, but again, because Sheringham, would you play him up top in the middle of a three? He would be described probably as a false nine.
Maybe, yeah, now. He is. But then he was next to a real nine.
Well, exactly. So, and again, that's, I mean, not everybody played 4-4-2, but most people
are we saying
did.
John Fashanu and Kai Havertz?
It's actually pronounced John Fashanu.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, get it right for crying out loud.
Yeah. But then you also think of someone like Ginola. Like, what was it about Ginola that made him so successful? Like, obviously it was a skill, because he'd still get fouled.
Yeah.
But he was
but
quite
he was also
big
6 foot
bite.
Two
yeah.
and ripped.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which does seem to be, you know, like the profile of like most wingers is about that now.
Yeah.
Like, I can't really think of anyone.
I mean, you know the story about Zinedine Zidane almost ending up at Blackburn?
Yeah.
Seeing Zidane, a like really physical playmaker, moving on from your De Bruyne suggestion, I know he's not a current player, Zidane, but seeing him actually turning up and playing for Blackburn in like 90s Premier League, that would have been amazing.
Well, Djorkaeff have worked.
Well, yeah, Djorkaeff, again, that kind of second striker, I'd call it. But I think, though, if you have pace, then back in those days, footballers just weren't as fast. And I know this is a slightly out of context quote, but I love that Ian Wright quote when he said, you know, when he eventually got to play or to have a trial with Crystal Palace, and he just went, I couldn't believe how slow they were. I love that so much. Players were slow at, like, again, pace moments. So if you had, say, Bukayo Saka.
Is that why Jordan's bringing up Leon Bailey?
Maybe. But if you had Bukayo Saka, for example, and Saka, he would be playing left midfield, let's be honest.
Yeah, yes.
But he can do his doggies. He's got that kind of, you know, the engine and all that kind of stuff. He would be having to cross the ball rather than cut inside and shoot. We would see a very different type of player. He'd just burn past players. Mm. He'd be great. You know, like I think it was Sterling, so I think people might think, oh, they might be a bit lightweight. No, I think anybody with a bit of pace. So anyway, look, good question, Jordan. I think we're going to have to stop there because we could talk on and on and on about that one. And no doubt people are going, but what about Jordan Pickford? He could take out strikers willy-nilly back in, you know. But yeah, I don't know. All right, coming up after the break, our favourite football controversies. See you in a moment.
Have you made the switch to Knix? Millions of women have made the switch to the revolutionary period underwear from Knix. That's K-N-I-X. Period panties from Knix are like no other, making them the number one leak-proof underwear brand in North America. They're comfy, stylish, and absorbent, perfect for period protection from your lightest to your heaviest days. They look, feel, and machine wash just like regular underwear, but feature incognito protection that has you covered. You can shop sizes from extra small to 4XL. Choose from all kinds of colors, prints, and different styles, from bikinis to boy shorts, thongs to high-rise. You've got to try Knix. See why millions are ditching disposable, wasteful period products and have switched to Knix. Go to knix.com and get 15% off with promo code TRY15. That's knix.com, promo code TRY15 for 15% off life-changing period underwear. That's knix.com.
Let's talk about something that's not always top of mind, but still really important. Life insurance. Why? Because it offers financial protection for your loved ones and can help them pay for things like a mortgage, credit card debt. It can even help fund an education. And guess what? Life insurance is probably a lot more affordable than you think. In fact, most people think life insurance is 3 times more expensive than it is. So with State Farm Life Insurance, you can protect your loved ones without breaking the bank. Not sure where to start? State Farm has over 19,000 local agents that can help you choose an option to fit your needs and budget. Get started today and contact a State Farm agent or go to statefarm.com.
Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard.
tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love, an easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head to head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Welcome back to the mailbag, everybody. Vish, what are we talking about in this half?
We are talking about controversy. This comes from Moon on the Discord. What's the Ramble's favourite ever football controversy? And I suppose the elephant in the room with this question is the hearing for Man City's 130 charges, which starts on Monday. So I suppose legally, we can't say anything about it, but we can draw pictures and show each other.
Yeah, okay. And it can't be your favourite because we've not got to the end of it yet. We don't know what the conclusion
is. Yeah.
It could all be a misunderstanding.
Exactly.
Vish, why don't you start us off with your favourite controversy?
My favourite moment...
Controversial
moment.
Yeah.
It might also be my favourite moment. I was Eric Cantona kung fu kicking the Crystal Palace fan.
Was that controversial?
I suppose it was controversial in how
controversial
much I enjoyed
decision.
It.
Controversial decision he made.
Yeah.
Should I just walk off the pitch or should I do a kung fu kick on the bloke?
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, it's more that I just wanted to say that because it's all the offshoots from it are great. Like the guy's defence that he wasn't swearing or being, xenophobic.
He just went down the front to say, "That's it, get off you go, mate."
That's an early bath for you, Cantona.
I've enjoyed your visit.
Yeah. That's
I love it. As if he could have at least said, "Oh yeah, I did say that's an effing early bath for you, Cantona." Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, just off your pop.
Off you go. That's an early bath for you, Cantona. And he objected to that, weirdly. So
it's an overreaction from Cantona, no matter how you cut it.
Yeah, yeah. But in terms of like an actual controversy, it's not my... I suppose I can't have this as a favourite because it's too on the nose. But
West Ham moving to their new stadium?
I mean, that is controversial in many different ways, but it's also like a...
But it worked out well.
Did it?
Not for everybody.
Yes, the residents of Newham have never been never been happier, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's VAR.
What, like the introduction of VAR?
I think it is VAR.
Cool, that's a big one.
I don't enjoy the week-to-week controversy, but I do think it's a really interesting, just a case study in humanity.
Ooh.
Where we're in a situation where we had a thing that was great and was flawed, but we wanted to remove the flaws.
God,
and that's why so many people voted it in. And we're in a situation now where we believe we're stuck with it.
You could do a PhD on this.
Genuinely
good.
But it's remarkable, isn't it? Because before it came in, I think we all knew, we all had reservations about it. Mm. But I think by and large, we were unified with the idea that there were enough, you know, it was perceived that there were enough refereeing errors and there were at some cost. You know, we mentioned the, I can't remember if we did this on air, but we were talking about this question. One of the things that came up was Thierry Henry's handball against Ireland, which was like one of the... I feel like that was one of the real moments that shifted the conversation along a little bit further.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because even when we had goal line technology, people weren't totally happy with that just being it in terms of technology impinging on the game. Mm. And I find it all like genuinely fascinating because... even the people in charge of VAR, even the people who brought VAR to the table, aren't sure about VAR. Hence why they're so, not only so upfront about apologising for it, but they got a TV show commissioned for it, explaining all the VAR decisions. Like, it's kind of crazy how far we've gone through it. And so, like, in terms of hitting the sweet spot of controversy for the purposes of this question, I think it has to be VAR.
Good one. Andy, a favourite football controversy for you?
I don't know if favourite's really the right word.
A big one.
But the immediate one that springs into my mind is Wimbledon moving to Milton Keynes.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one. Because...
Is it controversial that you didn't follow them? You're a fan, aren't you? You're a fan of the club.
Controversial.
Follow you over land and sea. That's how the song goes. Yeah. Not over land, though.
Yeah, if you're a Chelsea fan, that's how it goes.
MK Dons, yeah. You will walk alone without Andy Brassel.
Yeah. Not just me, though.
No, go on then. So why was it so controversial?
Well, because it's completely unprecedented, a club being taken out of its community. Obviously, this is something in terms of franchising that happens in American sports
a lot.
What
about Arsenal? Used to be the Village, didn't they?
Yeah, that's right. A perfectly comparable when it's like... 90 years ago.
American sports are doing well.
Okay. Yeah, apparently people in history didn't deserve a local club years ago. But Andy, sorry for the bollocks.
Seattle deserves its basketball club back, by the way, before you start on that. But, you know, it's hugely controversial because of the way that, not just because it completely bucked precedent, but the fact that the way that Milton Keynes Dons are still viewed now, really, I guess less so because they've been so... unsuccessful given their resources, given the stadium that they've got, which is an incredible stadium, that really that they're still in League Two is like an unbelievable failure. But I think this has, like, I guess, coloured my football supporting life so much. So it's kind of, I guess I would say favourite, because obviously is really controversial in the fact that it's still something that people talk about. It's still something that people find very hard to get their heads around how it happened. And for me, even though it was the worst thing that could happen to you as a football fan, it's actually led to the best years of my football supporting life.
The
AFC Wimbledon thing. Interestingly as well, as you're listening to this, presumably on Saturday morning, I am for the first time ever today going to a Wimbledon versus MK game. Because I've never wanted to go. I've never wanted to really acknowledge.
Because it legitimizes their presence and their kind of like their status as a rival.
Yeah, whereas, I don't want to treat it like it's a massive game. It's a bigger game for them than it is for us. I think because it it makes them. Yeah, if they've got a rival, it makes them like a proper football club.
Yeah, legitimizes them. Yeah,
but it's interesting. Like if you go back to January, when like Wimbledon played MK twice in the second half of last season, so the away game was in January, and we lost in that. Went down to 9 men. It was pretty poor, and they were always more up for it. So they've beaten us a lot because they're better resourced than us and because they've always been more up for it. And January was like a sort of turning point for a lot of supporters where they're like, fuck this, they can't keep beating us. This is getting embarrassing.
Yeah.
And everyone really got the chip about it for the first time. So it was the first time that Wimbledon fans got a bit of a taste for blood, really. Or Wimbledon fans as a whole got a taste for blood because obviously some of them were really up for it anyway. And so the team played a really aggressive match in the second game and obviously won it right at the end with that Ronan Curtis game that was hugely celebrated. So, but the reason I'm going, actually, is just because I don't live in London anymore. I'm just down here in the week.
And you want a right old tear-up, Andy. I wonder why you brought your chib in today.
Well, the thing is, I don't get the chance to go to the games all the time, and I'm in town. So it's for the same reason I would go to a Bristol Street Motors Trophy game. I wouldn't normally have gone to that in the past, but Wimbledon are playing and I'm in town.
Yeah, fair enough.
Okay. But of course, the real losers of the whole equation were Kingstonian.
That's not true.
I had to say it. Luke's not here.
You had to say something that wasn't true because Luke isn't here.
Someone has to.
Let me bring you all back down to earth. I'll start with a quote, and perhaps you'll get it eventually. Which controversy I'm talking about. Mick, you're a liar. You're a fucking wanker. I didn't rate you as a player. I don't rate you as a manager. I don't rate you as a person. You're a fucking wanker and you can stick your World Cup up your ass. The only reason I have any dealings with you is that somehow you're the manager of my country. You can stick it up your bollocks. The Saipan incident I've gone for.
What a speech, though. What a speech.
According to Niall Quinn in his autobiography, Roy Keane's 10-minute oration against Mick McCarthy was clinical, fierce, earth-shattering to the person.
Oh, that's
person.
Just the crescendo.
Yeah, earth-shattering to the person on the end of it, and it ultimately caused a huge controversy in Irish society. And it really did. And I'm sure you could get that going if you went to a pub in Ireland or somewhere. You know, it would. I remember some Irish chaps. I mean, this would have only been a few years after the incident, but they were like, the lad was saying, you know, my granny never watches football. She's not interested in anything. I go around her house and she had a full-on opinion about whether it, you know, they should have kept him, whether he should have gone, all that kind of stuff. It was an amazing thing.
There are so many strands of controversy to it, though, aren't
that
there?
That unloading from a player and a manager is, to our knowledge, is quite rare. Like, to that level. To that level, because he was their stand-up player.
To the level where you make your position completely untenable.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
But possibly his as well.
But I have to ask you, chaps, bearing in mind that Roy Keane said that he was pissed off to the back teeth with the setup for the Ireland national team. He said a bunch of jokers, you know.
Very, and the facilities.
They had no football pitch on the island or something ridiculous like that. He said he's coming back from an injury. The training wasn't set up and it felt like, oh yeah, that island's near where the World Cup was, near-ish. Maybe we'll go there. And it was all so lacklustre. And he was just like, this is piss poor. Obviously he's used to the standards at Manchester United. Like, I have some sympathy to the point of, I think I probably come down on the Roy Keane side of things. However, if you unload like that, you've gone. Like, you absolutely are gone.
It's irredeemable at that point.
Totally irredeemable.
Because there are different layers to this, yeah? Because one of the things that maybe isn't said alongside the story is that those reservations were mentioned previously.
Yep.
It wasn't just like Roy Keane is holding this in. Obviously, Roy Keane's never going to hold anything in.
Well, I think he had to a point, probably.
Yeah, to a point. Yeah. But yeah. I think it was a couple of like Roy Keane-esque comments of like, oh, is that you putting out the cones just now, are you?
Yeah.
And then it kind of gets this. Yeah. But so it's almost like on the coaching staff to not see the warning signs.
But also as well, if you think about how, to take a recent example, like Southgate would do his England stuff. You know, he'd have his sort of tribal leaders, if you like, they were kind of dubbed, and he would be often in talks with...
You'd hope Roy Keane was a banker.
No, but clearly, like, a guy of that importance and their standout player, like, McCarthy should... Like, there should have been some sort of dialogue or whatever's going on. But also as well, like, the importance... Like his performance for Ireland against Netherlands in that qualifying campaign when they won 1-0... In Dublin, like, was magnet, like, it just, but it's funnily enough, I think I've mentioned this on the show before, but Matt Holland, who was pretty much his replacement, really, kind of, if my memory serves me well, and scored against Cameroon in the opening game, he said that he was sat there, obviously at the table, they were all there, and it was just, he was like, they were like naughty school children, like everyone was looking down, going, like trying not to laugh.
Yeah, of course.
But isn't that incredible? Like, you would think... Is anybody going to jump in? Is anybody going to say anything? No, they're also sort of scared of the situation.
Is anyone going to jump in front of an angry Roy Keane?
Well, there you go. So it shows you the kind of presence of the player.
I'll jump behind him. Yeah. and another thing, Mick.
But what I'm saying is, though, think about, like, let's use England as the comparison here. Like, imagine... okay, perhaps that's a stupid example, as if Harry Kane's ever going to stop Lee Carsley. Right, enough.
The other aspect to this bollocking is... If you look at the core of the squad, the younger core of the squad, Ian Hart, Damien Duff's 23, Robbie Keane's 21,
there's a lot of young players.
Richard Dunn's 22, Clinton Morrison's 23, Andy O'Brien 22, Stephen Reid 21. There's a lot of young players there who that's like their formative World Cup experience, but also like some of the names I've read out there, there's a lot of talent. And it kind of, as you say, like, it's part of Irish like football folklore because I think it's tinged with a bit of fucking hell. Like, because that was the last good bit of Roy Keane, that they missed out on. And that call coming through, they could, like, it's hard not to look at that and think, that's hilarious. For fuck's sake, why did it have to happen then?
Yeah, I know what you mean. And it's such a funny thing to quote, stick it up your bollocks.
Also, just when they doorstepped him and he was walking his dogs.
Yeah, that's right.
But his dog was like panting because Viking stormed off. I was dragging him by the leash.
And also, he was one of the finest Premier League players, and right then with Manchester United, you know, like was Mr. Manchester United, you could argue as well. Everything collided and poof, it all went off.
Yeah,
I think that's where we'll leave today's mailbag, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble Mailbag, part of the Acast Creator Network. Do remember to get your questions in for next week's episode and follow us on X, TikTok and Instagram at Football Ramble, and subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Have a lovely weekend, everybody, and up the AFC Wimbledon lot.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Let's talk about something that's not always top of mind, but still really important: life insurance. Why? Because it offers financial protection for your loved ones and can help them pay for things like a mortgage, credit card debt. It can even help fund an education. And guess what? Life insurance is probably a lot more affordable than you think. In fact, most people think life insurance is 3 times more expensive than it is. So with State Farm Life Insurance, you can protect your loved ones without breaking the bank. Not sure where to start? State Farm has over 19,000 local agents that can help you choose an option to fit your needs and budget. Get started today and contact a State Farm agent or go to statefarm.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Do you ever find yourself playing the budgeting game? Well, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive, you can find options that fit your budget and potentially lower your bills. Try it at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. Not available in all states.
P1 with Matt and Tommy is the only F1 podcast you need this F1 season. We thought this season was going to be, well, a bit rubbish. But with Red Bull struggling and Lando Norris pushing closer and closer to the title, we are in for an amazing end to this year's F1 season. Join us for our reaction minutes after the checkered flag falls across practice, qualifying and races every weekend. You'll also get our weekly driver rating series, predictions episodes and loads more. Everything to keep you up to date with the most exciting sport in the world. Thought this F1 season was going to be boring? Think again. Search P1 with Matt and Tommy in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Double.
You're talking to a celebrity. How are you doing? Oh, I just made $24 million on my last film, and it's doing great. It's not interesting to hear how your life is going well. What's interesting to me is when you tell me something stupid that happened to you, something funny, something annoying. I'm Alan Zweig, naysayer, contrarian, filmmaker. Subscribe to The Worst Podcast. It'll be the best, worst podcast you've ever heard.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.